by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covet means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not public. Its stakes are buried, not headlined. Its percentages are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious. Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake! I drink it up!
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Oh,
the best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Standing at Shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there.
Hello, folks. Oh, it's Sunday, September the 11th, 2016. This is Clint filling in for Shali today. Got my friend Patrick Jordan joining me in a few minutes. Just wanted to tell you about, I came across, I haven't done a video in a while, so I decided to do a video, and I was thinking, what the heck, man, what am I gonna do this video? How am I gonna put it to people? How do I entertain people while trying to actually tell them how screwed up they are from all of the programming, the public education, the entertainment? How can I tell people that this very important thing that nobody seems to realize, including me, I never could understand why voting and why the elections bothered me so much. I always knew there was some fraud behind the entire thing, but I could never quite put my finger on what exactly it was, and then I came across what it was. And it really kind of floored me that I hadn't figured this out before. But, so, I'm basically making these, I'm going to make a couple of videos at least, where I'm actually using a facial recognition sort of cartoon character. I'm going to be running for president as Nota. My name, Nota, which means none of the above. None of the above. And that is what people should be marking down as who they should elect for president, because that's the only actual choice. When it comes down to a choice, it's either yes or no, folks. This is why I keep telling people, you're either out of the system or you're in it. But while you're in it, you're a loser. You're a slave to that system. You're never going to ever accomplish any type of freedom while you're in that system, especially when you're voting for your rulers. When your rulers give you a choice between two of their family members, cousins of the same grandmother, when that's your choice, then you have no choice. That's causality. That's causing you to actually pick, right? So, I've got all the evidence, which is quite clear and quite open, that the United States has an indirect election of the president, that the voting public have absolutely nothing to do with voting, or I should say electing the elect. There is no purpose for the popular vote whatsoever, except except for the fact that the actual action of going out and voting does something that is really screwed up. It actually legitimizes the Electoral College, which are the electors who actually elect and vote and choose the president. What's so interesting about that is when you discover, for instance, Black's Law explains that a voter is an elector that does not elect. A voter, the Secretary of State for North Carolina, she comes right out and says it. She says, when the voters in North Carolina voted in the primary or whatever it was, they voted for this slate of electors. She's speaking to the Electoral College as they're about to cast their actual vote, their actual choice, their actual election for president. She's sitting there and she's just revealing the whole thing and not doing a very good job of it because she's trying to speak to people who actually believe, you speak to the public. You got to be careful when you're an elitist and you're speaking to them, down to them, saying, thank you very much for being so stupid as to not understand your place in our society. The first people in a society ever to exist that doesn't understand their frickin' place, their class, their phylum, their speciality in the society, their generality, I should say. So, yeah, I mean, it's amazing when you actually think about it. Voting, and here was the conclusion, which blew my mind, but suddenly I'm like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. When I tell you this, it's not going to make sense. It's not going to compute. It's kind of like the simulacra. Simulacra is a copy without an original. What the hell is a copy without an original? Right? Oh my God, well, a map is a good example of a copy without an original. A painting. So voting, it turns out voting in our system where the electors actually do the voting and the voters actually merely legitimize the electors, it turns out that voting itself, the act of voting or the franchise of voting, which we call freedom, the freedom to vote, the franchise to vote, actually takes away. It actually takes away your choice or your ability to choose. It's you saying, I agree that the bloodline should be president. I agree that one of these two candidates, one of these two parts of the whole, should be president, and therefore I'm going to give up my choice of yes or no, and I'm going to pray in public prayer to my gods, and I'm going to tell them, hey, go ahead and make your election while I choose one of your bloodline cousins or the other, and I'm going to, therefore, go ahead and legitimize your... So basically, you've given up your right to say no. You've actually given up your choice. That's what voting is. Now, most people, including myself, would say, well, voting is a choice. But you got to remember, this is an indirect election. This is not a direct popular vote election, as we saw when George Bush did not win the popular vote, lost it by probably 500,000 votes or so, but still got the presidency because of the Electoral College. Now, Bush has some serious blood going on, He's got the Pierce line from his mother, and he's got the Bush line from his father. I don't know what to say. What's his name predicted it so well? He's, Burke's peerage. Dead now, but he every year he said, hey, it's the same thing. We predict the United States president who's going to win by how much royal blood they have in their system, right? So, that's the That's the fabled genealogy. That's the fabled history that we go by. That's how we get our presidents. It's not because you vote for president. You don't elect. You only vote. And your vote only counts indirectly to justify and legitimize the actual people who do vote. Which, if you look, you'll find our attorney generals and people in the high-up places that will never let this franchise actually go to be a popular vote amongst the people. Now, inversely, you can go to, say, Korea or Russia or probably Afghanistan, I think, you know, these horribly horrible, horrible countries. Well, guess what? Even Iran has their president, their head of state, to be a direct election of the people. But free, good old America, absolutely not. And you want to know why that really is? You want to know why that really is? That's because all the powers of the Congress, all the war powers and emergency powers of Congress were granted to the president. The president can do anything he wants. It's basically a dictatorial position at this point. I've covered this, and I will cover that in one of my books coming up. The notion of the national emergency, that emergency and war are considered about the same thing, and so we declare a national emergency against something like flu or whatever, and because of that, all the regulations and laws are in place for the time of that emergency, i.e. war against the emergency. And that's where you have things like mandatory vaccines and all of that stuff just waiting to happen. All the president's got to do is declare a national emergency. Now we have a war against, rabies, and now everybody has to get a rabies shot, and then everybody turns into a fucking mad zombie. Right? That's about where we're at. So, basically, what I'm trying to tell you folks is it's one of those humbling things that we either dismiss and go ahead and do it anyway because we have cognitive dissonance, or we reel in almost a painful realization and we back away and we say, I am not going to participate in something that legitimizes a fucking war corporation that puts the same bloodline family members, direct descendants of the kings and queens of England and other countries, into the power position of the United States, which goes against, of course, every false history of the victors, all the false history, all the romanticism, Roman being the key word in Roman, tick, right? It goes against everything, but I assure you, as a fairly respected researcher, this video will certainly convince you. And so again, you're either going to go through the motions and you're going to say, I choose to vote even though my vote destroys my choice, or you're going to say, screw it, or you're going to go to the polls because you know you're fucked anyway, then you're going to go and you're going to say, I vote nota for president. I vote none of the above. You want to send a fucking prayer, a public prayer to your lords and masters, your landholders and your politicians, and especially your electors, vote none of the above. Because why? Well, because you can't. It's not a choice. You're going to have to write it in. You're going to actually have to say, hey, fuck you, I don't want to participate in your shitty little system anymore, none of the fucking above. You can add fucking, but I'd prefer just none of the above. That way it's, you know, we can get a vote count or a non-vote count. Anyway, that's my rant for today. Welcome to the show, Patrick Jordan from vaccinefraud.com.
Hi, Clint. Hi, everybody. Happy Patriot Day. Clint, I don't pay attention to any of this bullshit. And I'm not, like, an idiot, and it's not like I don't know what September 11th is, but I looked at the calendar and I go, Patriot Day? Why did they invent, like, a new holiday? Because, and the reason I'm highlighting this is, their bullshit has no influence on my mind. I'm thinking, why a new holiday?
I have not heard of a new holiday. Are you saying today is actually Patriot Day?
I have to live by a calendar. I actually believe that we're in hell, and we are sentenced, as it were, in a prison for a set amount of time, which is the date of our death. And in order to keep track of what day it is, I have to, like, cross off every day on my calendar. Otherwise, I just don't even know what day it is. And I'm crossing off the days on the calendar, and it's like Patriot Day. Because it takes about $1 million for Congress to actually declare a holiday. So they took these taxes that they stole from you. It's actually called tribute in the book of Deuteronomy. They took your tribute to the tune of $1 million to designate September 11th as Patriot Day. And it caught me off guard because I'm going, gee, why? And now that I know, I'm still going, gee, why?
Well, it must be because when 9/11 happened, we all sat back like a bunch of pussies and didn't do anything. When our government took down 3, 4, 5 buildings.
Right.
Right? That must be why, because they love the Patriot, as Drew, my archiver friend, as he says, they love the Patriotards because they can sit around and they can talk all day about how patriotic and how they want to go back to something that never actually existed, some system, some government, some constitution, some piece of paper that's going to save them, right? That's the notion. It's so funny when you think about it. So, I mean, of course they're going to celebrate the Patriot. At the same time, they're banning the United States flag in most of the schools.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Because pretty much if you put any flag, and especially, and of course, the one with the golden fringe, which is the flag of admiralty, you're actually claiming that object or place as a military installation. And I was told this by one of my list members. She's very intelligent and informed, and she comes from a military background. She said if on, like, Flag Day, you put a flag anywhere on your quote-unquote property, you're saying that this then belongs to the United States military and can be used as them, commandeered as lodging for troops.
Sure. That's why there's a flag in every hospital, in every court, in every government building that you see, whether it's state or federal. You're always going to see that friendly friendly war flag being flown. And see, people don't even know that it is a war flag, that the correct flag of a peaceful nation, the stripes would actually be horizontal instead of vertical, right? I mean, you can look up the peace flag and the war flag, and you can, I mean, I'm not just saying that, right? So, I mean, people that have no notion that their government is constantly flying the war flag against them, right? We made the distinction or the lack of distinction between war and peace, which is real simple. War only happens when peace becomes less profitable than war, right? So, I mean, basically war is only to clear up commercial channels so that peace can happen, so that these bastards can rule the world on your shoulders. You're propping them up, as the artwork in Philadelphia so plainly shows. You're literally, I don't know what to tell. I don't know what to say. I can't believe that I live in a frickin' place that people don't know that they're slaves. I don't understand how anybody can be so patriotic, so celebratory of their own enslavement. I think that is the most bizarre aspect of life.
Part of it is public education, to inculcate, and that word means to abuse somebody until they adopt your view. So everybody has been inculcated into, this is the freest, most prosperous nation in the world, when it's actually the the policeman to the war machine. They actually inflict their commerce on everybody, and it's all in the language, Clint. When you hear them say, "Well, we have to be in Africa because we have an interest in that region." Well, interest is a money word. It's not, well, oh, I'm interested in Africa. You know, my name is Billy Goat, and I want to give everybody vaccines so that they can buy my computers. No, interest means they've got an investment in there, and they want their money back.
Well, you know, and interest also doesn't imply preservation or assistance in any charitable way. So anytime the United States has an interest in some area, you know, or causes a war, you know, it's what's funny is they always use the same thing. They always say we're fighting to spread democracy.
Oh, I love that.
We're gonna topple this nation. We're gonna topple this country and this kill women and children so that they can have the right to be free. Which means that we're gonna give them an identity, a social security number, put them into a franchise just like all the other people, and then they're free because free means franchise. It's just amazing to me that is, it's kind of how we operate. It's this horrible, horrible commerce machine that we call war, but I remind people, we haven't been at war. There's been no wars. Stop calling them wars. There's only been emergencies, and there's been illegal occupations. There's been CIA-run ops, such as Vietnam, where Oliver North and soldiers and people were being left there because the military says, oh, no, we don't have a declaration of war, active military in Vietnam or anywhere else. No, no, no. Absolute plausible denial that we have anybody there. You had Colonel Fletcher Prowley, I think was his name, who's dead now, who did a fantastic interview on all of that. It's just, you know, we're involved in commerce. It's not a legitimate anything, but it's specifically not a legitimate war in any of the countries we're at. All right, so stop calling it that. Start calling it what it is, which is just a sham, shameful murder to steal oil and poppies.
No, Clint. And I'm eating in your ear so you feel more like you're on RBN, and my name is Pat the Free Man. I'm trying to get breakfast in while you soliloquy. I've always taken exception to the use of your personal pronoun, we. And then you inculcated me into seeing the light that I'm pretty sure it was at least Bin Laden, but a lot of those Middle Easterners actually blame American citizens for the state of the world. And, you know, if you were patriotic, you go, what? That's outrageous. You know, those crazy Arabs or, you know, whatever label they want to put on them, they're insane, you know. But the reason why the American citizens are being blamed is because the tribute that is taken from them under military occupation is used to build that self-same military to occupy every other part of the globe. Therefore, just like you use the word we, it's not the American government, which is a fiction, which has no substance. The people of America, by the taxes that are exacted from them, actually build all the grief that's being exported throughout the world.
Yeah, it's the silence. You know, the silence in America is deafening, unless it's the frickin' Kardashians, you know, or something. Let me read, you know, since we're talking about Bin Laden, You know, let me read what people don't actually hear, even though they're watching it from, this was on PBS, right? Right after, well, this is what he said. He said, this is an interview with John Miller, PBS, in 1998 with Osama bin Laden. He says, Mr. bin Laden, you have issued a fatwa calling on Muslims to kill Americans where they can. When they can, it is directed to at all Americans. Is that fatwa directed at all Americans, just the American military, or just the Americans in Saudi Arabia? Right. So here's an asshole asking a question about something he completely doesn't understand, and Osama bin Laden comes back at him with just a vengeance, with just this beautiful response. And you want to know why I'm so, you know, why I am so interested in bringing, quote, a religious law back to, a moral law, a scriptural law back to people? Osama bin Laden has said why I'm so interested. He said, here's what he says. He says, Allah has ordered us to glorify the truth and to defend Muslim land, especially the Arab Peninsula, against the unbelievers. After World War II, the Americans grew more unfair and more oppressive towards people in general, and Muslims in particular. The Americans started it, and retaliation and punishment should be carried out following the principle of reciprocity, especially when women and children are involved. In other words, we're killing so many women and children. Through history, America has not been known to differentiate. So let me say this again. Through history, America has not been known to differentiate between the military and the civilians, or between men and women, or adults and children. Those who threw atomic bombs and used the weapons of mass destruction against Nagasaki and Hiroshima were the Americans. Can the bombs differentiate between military and women and infants and children? And here is where it gets good. He says, America has no religion that can deter her from exterminating whole peoples. Your position against Muslims in Palestine is despicable and disgraceful. America has no shame. We believe that the worst thieves in the world today and the worst terrorists are the Americans. Nothing can stop you, except perhaps retaliation in kind. We do not have to differentiate between military or civilian. As far as we are concerned, they are all targets. And this is what the fatwa says. The fatwa is general, and it includes all those who participate in or who help the Jewish occupiers in killing Muslims. Now, here's a guy who just called us out. You want to know why he was blamed for 9/11? Here's a guy who just called us out 3 years before 9/11, before we officially started filming the vast amounts of carnage that we cause in these countries to steal their resources. Here's a guy that calls it out, and he says it exactly like it is. He says, we have no religion. We have a state, a legal law, an anti-moral or amoral law that has no moral equivalent, no religious law, no moral or scriptural law that can stop us from exterminating entire civilizations. Now that, to me, was a kick in the pants. And you know what? It got met with anger. Patriots, you know, all the crap that comes from the Patriot movement. Nobody actually heard what this man was saying. All they heard was that it includes all of us. It's, he said, well, what did he say? He said, yeah, he'll kill us, our women and children. Why? Because that's what we've been doing to them without any moral compass whatsoever for way, way, way too long. Now, to me, these are the kind of statements that should be put in a place that is so high and so repetitive, examined in a way that says, oh my God, here's a guy that just called us the terrorists of the world, and we're calling him the terrorist. Wait a minute. He's only a product of us. Right? And, you know, if this is the general outlook on things, and essentially the whole problem is that the common people of America sit back and allow such things as the presidential elections, a complete sham, a known, internationally known, indirect election of president where the people actually believe they are electing the president, like a bunch of fucking idiots. I mean, you know what's really funny, Patrick? If I'm an illegal alien and I want to get citizenship in this country, do you know that I have to answer questions about the patriotic nature of America and how wonderful she is? Well, one of those questions on the naturalization exam just happens to be who elects the president of the United States. And guess what? The answer ain't the people. The answer is very clear. The Electoral College.
Okay, so a European was doing an interview at the junior college that I was at to put in to the college newspaper. And one of the questions was, didn't you know? Because it was a damning question, because you had to answer yes or no, whether or not you knew that Thomas Jefferson was a slaveholder. Thomas Jefferson is like worshipped for one of the founding fathers that, you know, crafted our glorious Constitution, where all men are created equal. Yeah, except for your slaves.
Crafted it? You mean he crapped it out?
I'm glad I'm done eating. So let me go a little bit backwards and start to address some of the things that you said more recently, and then let's get right into the Electoral College thing.
So wait, before you say that, I got one more thing I got to add to that, because the whole point is to let you know that yes, you can, you have a direct election of senators and you know, congressmen, basically the House and the Senate, right? And 532 of those is why you have 532 electors, because they political parties actually choose the fucking electors. It's not like we choose the electors. They actually go through the political party. So, the point I'm trying to make is that since Congress, you get to elect Congress, which basically passed a bunch of laws that tied their hands, that said the president has ultimate power, the president is a tyrant, is a warlord, basically. He can do anything he wants anytime, can attack any country, da-da-da-da-da. So, what you can vote for are the very, you know, people who basically assign all their power over to the president so that the president doesn't have to ask them anymore permission. They did the same thing with the Treasury. So the Treasury doesn't need to ask permission to do things anymore. So you got this rogue, basically, executive office that is the one that's doing all of these counterintelligence, you know, CIA ops and all this shit that Osama bin Laden is talking about here in 1998. And yet, you have no freaking power to do anything to change that office. Yeah, you can vote for your quote-unquote representations, your representatives, but you cannot vote for president. And all of the power has been assigned from those representatives over to the president, which is the thing, the whole executive branch, which is just about all of government now, which is the thing.
No shame, and we had covered this, I don't know, in private or on air, that it was described to me that guilt is for what you did, shame is for what you are. America has no shame. And, you know, that's inclusive of what I call, like, the Nazi collaborators, which is the white guys, you know, keep you powder dry, that are paying the tribute to the Zionist Yehudim that actually run this, well, I call it the PMO, Planetary Military Occupation. And all it is, you know, the Arabs, that's just one of the three clans of Noah, of which they have internecine war between what are called the Jews and the Arabs. And then what? What is the other major religious division that they use as a political definer is the Christians. So you got these three divisions that are factionally having war with each other for primacy, for control of the planet, and everybody else is collateral damage. So there are no citizens. They're just like mice that happen to be in the house of the Illuminati that are slated for extermination because they don't want you eating their food. I mean, they call the Satanists call them useless eaters. And I say them, you know, I project outwards. I don't accept these labels. They may be out there. We collectively may be seen in their eyes as goy, as useless eaters, as collateral damage. But I don't like wipe that on myself and go, oh, I'm such a useless eater, goy, that, you know, they're gonna damage me. It needs to be fought. And Bin Laden was actually schooled here in the United States when he was probably in his 20s, you know, college level, university level schooling. And they interviewed him while he was here, and he said, "They said, what do you think of America? Well, I really don't like it. Everybody has these great lawns in front of their houses when they could be growing food and feeding the poor." And I'm thinking, my God, that made it into the newspapers? And there's no doubt in my mind, Clint, that some patriotard would look at that and go, that damn Arab. And it's like, listen to the words. America is shameful and guilty because they have these enormous yards and they're not even growing food. They're spraying chemicals on them and mowing them and burning fossil fuels, you know, at least once a week and in competition with their neighbors for who can have the greenest grass with the least amount of dandelions. Then there's people starving all over the world. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah. Well, you know, but, it reminds me of that book that I think every freaking goyim should read, which was "Hey, You Gentile."
I love that one.
Hey,
yeah.
You Gentile. You know, all that sounds like, again, is going back to sport. We follow a sort of a set of rules. Everything is based around sport. And the sport in the neighborhoods is to have a green lawn and be well stocked in plants that have nothing to do with sustaining your life, so that you're completely dependent, both paying a huge water bill and a huge electricity bill and a huge, you know, so I mean, technically, it just sounds like another game, doesn't it?
When you have the way of reframing the components of the situation and giving new perspective of it, I can see it exactly as a game that was given to somebody with prefabricated rules. Because why isn't it that the human beings can't go, well, if we are going to play a game, let's invent one ourselves? Everything that we know, all the science that you and I consume in order to figure out how the hell to extract ourselves from this horrific situation that we're in. I've worked in laboratories and fabrication departments, so I know science, so I can see if they're bullshitting us in what they're representing. But I never did the clinical work. So everything that we get from what we hear from Bin Laden, I don't speak whatever he spoke, Arabic, so I don't know what he said. You know, it was translated. Nobody ever actually has a transcript of what Arnie Schicklgruber said, and I say that because Adolf Hitler is yet another trigger word. You know, we only have transcriptions of his speeches. I don't speak German. I don't know what he said. You know, we don't know anything, and we're given these games and these rules to play in a stage play, and everybody just does what they tell you in Hollywood. Toe the mark and say your lines. Well, it's time to say, what the fuck are you doing? You know, this is a stage. You're all idiots, and I don't want anything to do with this. That, you know, that's the Clint Richardson thing of none of the above. And, Clint, they are doing what, in phraseology, is showing their colors. See, I didn't know there was a peace flag and a war flag. I had no idea until just today. But I did know the idea of colors as they are flown as flags on a ship. And you see the colors being flown. They show you their colors so that you can know what their affiliation is, what country they are, and what their intent is. Because you and I did a very important show on RBN on piracy. And the Jolly Roger flown as a black flag. And think about that, you know, that's like a bug killer. Black flag, spray, get those roaches. The black flag says that we are pirates. If we chase you down and board you, we will take everything that you have, including you, and we might even give you quarter, which means we'll put you up, we won't kill you. If they fly a red flag, and see the differences in color, still the same Jolly Roger. Black flag means we won't kill you, maybe. Red flag means we will chase you down, we will board you, we will take everything you got, we will kill you and sink your ship. So when we talk about flags being flown, they're showing us their colors. It's just that we have been inculcated in public education paid for by the tribute, the taxes, to the Yahudim, just as said in Deuteronomy. I'll have to look it up. I think it's Deuteronomy 23, but don't quote me. And they're using it against us. They're making us ignorant of, well, if we had only seen that America was flying their war flag, then what that does is when you see from afar that a pirate ship is coming your way, you get the hell out of there, man. You don't like sail up to them and go, hey, you want to do some commerce?
Well, so the law of the flag, why you know, that's one of those sort of patriot mythologies that gets thrown around a lot. However, this one happens to be quite true. So it's you know, it has to do with, you know, maritime law, of course, the principle that, you know, when you see a flag, that the sailors in the vessel will be subject to the laws of the state corresponding to the flag flown by the vessel.
Correct.
Right, so if you're flying a private flag, well, then your state is private. You have no beef. You have no, you know, you would follow an international law. If you're flying a pirate flag, well, then your state is chaos. Your state is lawlessness. So you're going to be subject to basically, you know, organized crime. In a truly you know, almost an honorable organized crime, as opposed to the organized crime that you'd get from the United States or some other nation that's flying their flag of quote unquote peace in commerce, that really is going to rob you in a whole different way by exaction and extortion, right? So Justice Garza wrote that the law of the flag doctrine provides that a merchant ship is part of the territory of the country whose flag she flies. So I can be all the way over in Japan, but I'm still in America somehow.
Right. Oh,
well, gee, that means it doesn't actually fucking exist, because I'm taking it with me. Provides that a merchant ship is part of the territory of a country whose flag she flies, and that actions aboard that ship are subject to the laws of the flag state. However, jurisdiction may be exercised concurrently by a flag state and a territorial state. The law of the flag doctrine does not mandate that anything that occurs aboard a ship must be handled by the flag state. does not completely trump a sovereign's territorial jurisdiction to prosecute and violate laws. Law of the Flag doctrine is chiefly applicable to ships on the high seas where there is no territorial sovereign. I hate to tell you that, but that's the highways of the United States. And as respects ships in foreign territorial waters, it has little application. The flag state's jurisdiction is not exclusive when the ship is in a port or internal waters of another state. So, again, so you'd have, let's say you're on an American ship and you come across, you know, you're in the middle of the ocean, you come across a pirate ship, so you have two flags, two jurisdictions. One's jurisdiction of pretty much chaos, the other is the jurisdiction of a bunch of freaking assholes that have no idea that they are the actual pirates. Right? So you now you're gonna have clashing jurisdictions. Well, you know, the United States, see, this is why we fail, again, and this is what that book also says, you know, the UCOIM, this is what the protocols say, is that we follow the, we have a sport as our law. We come across the pirate ship, we actually would treat that ship as if there is some diplomacy or something that we can have with that ship, because we follow a sport. We're a sporting people. We follow a certain set of rules. They're not moral laws. They're not anything that have to do with reality. No, they're sport. And so we come across, and invariably, the lawless pirates are going to treat us like exactly what we are, a bunch of goyim who follow a law that basically will cause us to lose in the end. It's the whole purpose of the law, by the way. And they're going to board us, and they're going to take our shit, and they're going to kill us, slit our throats, and, you know, take over our property and probably sink our ship so that there's no evidence. And that's because, nice. That's because we follow their law. They set up the maritime system. They set up all of this shit so that they could fly around and float around and be international Jews and not be part of that. But they can be the pirates they are always wanted to be and not be bound by any of these international laws because they don't play sport.
But, and see, what Bin Laden was saying in that speech that you, the interview that you'd read, was what I was taught in martial arts. Hit a hit and kick a kick. And it is reciprocal. It's reactionary. You don't go, oh, there's a pirate ship coming. I think, shoot a warning shot across their bow. Fuck. You know, shoot them below the waterline and get rid of the motherfuckers.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. You know, this is, I think that what's most comical about it, and what's most comical to me about the whole patriot freedom movement is that, you know, one of the things I really now comprehend about the Bible is that it's like, hey, you want to be free? You got to separate yourself, right? That's the whole purpose of religion, is to live a law that is not part of the world as they've created it, the fake world, right? So you know, the church, These fake freaking antichrist churches, they're like, yeah, we must bring all religions together and live under one unity, even though our religions want to kill each other and completely have nothing to do with each other. We want to be peaceful and in unity, and, you know. And here's Christ in the Bible going, what the fuck? Right? He's like, no. Separate yourself. Circumcise yourself from those a-holes. Don't be part of their system. Don't be a part of their false doctrines. No. Leave the cities. Leave Babylon. Leave her. Leave that whore. That stupid cunty whore. Get out of her. Go away. No, separate yourself. Don't be part of that. Right? So you tell me then, how is it that we have in America this all-inclusive concept that we should be, well, and I'll tell you the reason. It's because we're not following any religious law, because, and the reason that we're going to lose because we don't have a religious law. We don't follow a law religiously. We follow a law that changes almost daily, and a language that changes almost daily in the courts. We have no set foundation. We have nothing of a moral foundation to follow. Now I understand that. Now I understand why comments are being made in other countries that are being forcibly taking in refugees, where they're saying, you know, France, for instance, one of the street preachers said, you know, the reason France is failing is because France lost its religion. We have nothing to fight for. Meanwhile, these Muslims, they're coming in, these Jews and Muslims, they're coming in, they have their own law because they have a religious law. They have a unity amongst them that is so much more powerful than anything the white races have anymore, the white countries, quote-unquote, have anymore, because those countries have completely lost their moral law, their moral compass, why they exist in the first place. These countries, they exist to express that... that moral law. Most of the founding fathers of this country, their quotes were very clear. We will die if we're not a Christian. Truly, that unwritten law, if we're not following that scriptural basis. And it's true. I can see it happening now. I understand it. I understand what Osama bin Laden was saying. He's saying you people are shameful. You have no religious. What did he say? You have no religion whatsoever. You're completely a shameful people. America has no religion that can deter her from exterminating whole peoples. Now people hear that and they say, "Oh, he's talking religion." No, when he says religion, he means law. He means that you have no law that can deter you from exterminating whole peoples. Make the distinction. Don't just hear the word religion. Hear the word law, the very check and balance against the legal law that actually allows us to go kill women and children in persona, in flattering title. Well, I did it because I'm following orders. I'm a soldier. God, don't you understand? I'm a soldier. Don't you understand? I did this because I was following orders. Well, son, you didn't follow the highest law. Do no harm. You didn't do anything. You know, you see, that's the problem. That's the problem, is that we don't realize that the Bible, as part of the common law, is the unwritten or unenforceable law. We have to voluntarily do it. It's not something that is written. It is not something that is enforceable. It's not something we get a license for. In fact, most of the licenses and things we get, license is another word for anarchy, means we're going against the natural law. We're going completely against our own best interests. We do that on a constant, daily basis in everything we do. And that's what we don't realize. We're always looking for government. We're always looking to elect a new president. We're always looking to a piece of paper, a constitution, to save us, when the whole time Osama said it best. He said, no, you have no fucking religion that can deter you from exterminating whole peoples.
I bet he did say fucking in Arabic.
I mean, that's a powerful message to every nation out there that claims and pretends to have these flattering titles of Christianity. I'm sorry, but, you know, that's part of the scheme. That's part of the way to win the international war by the international Jew, is to make Christians, basically, to Judaize Christians into a law, a system of law that literally defines them as goyim, slaves of the Jew. I'm sorry, that's the way it is. That's where we're at. That's what Christianity, in its modern legal sense, you know, these corporations, artificial persons, which the Bible says never put your faith in. I don't know what to say, man. He got it right. He got it freaking right. He called us out, and he was absolutely right. His words were proven. America has no religion that can deter her from exterminating whole peoples. We believe that the worst thieves in the world today and the worst terrorists are the Americans. Nothing can stop you from, except perhaps retaliation in kind. I have to agree with that statement. How can you not agree with that statement? What's going to stop us unless someone comes in here and kicks the shit out of us? What is going to stop us?
Well, you said it. See, what has been disturbing me lately is local junior colleges advertising careers in law enforcement. And see, that word, law enforcement, really just, it at my very core, it upsets me. What gives anybody the right, what gives anybody the thought in their head that they can take it upon themselves to inflict anything on another human being? And you can make a career out of inflicting, enforcing law. And whose fucking law? We're back to that game board again. It's a game board that was given to you from the outside. It has nothing to do with what came from the inside, which is what you just got done saying, if I'm not misinterpreting, Clint, that the enforcement of law has to be from the individual.
Yes. Well, the enforcement of self-law, self-government. You know, we know that the word government means, literally in the Latin, mind control, gubernare in mentis, right? So we're talking about self-control. We're talking about governing the mind, being compos mentis, being actually learned and empathetic. Now, I will say this, Patrick. There does come a point where in my own, you know, sort of realization of things, there does come a point where the concept of law enforcement, if you turn that around and consider what's happening right now with your biological interference, your artificial intelligence, your literally complete and utter reprogramming of nature, geoengineering of the skies and the seas and the lands, all of the shit that's happening right now, I gotta be honest with you, sitting around and talking about it is one thing, but enforcing the law of nature, or the laws of nature, which is the very design of life itself, knowing that disturbing that harmonious frequency, disturbing that shit, is gonna be the end of life. You know, there is a point where law enforcement of the natural law might not fall into that category you just created.
Okay, and I can explain that because, you know, like you, I spend most of my days, and, you know, listen, I don't have television. The only radio I have is in the house. When I'm outside and working, I've got nothing but the bugs trying to fly in my ears and pulling weeds out of the ground and the sounds of the blood rushing inside my head and my thoughts. And I think about this stuff constantly. And what I came to realize is within the Christian tradition, it is taught among the fundamentalists that you are in the world but not of it. And this alienation that is taught in that level of inculcation is you don't belong to this world, you don't belong to this planet, then you divorce yourself of any responsibility, any stewardship, the very stewardship that you and I know was actually established in the book of Genesis. It's all gone. And so why would anybody, from a philosophical point of view, be invested in defending the planet? But what you did is you recharacterized that from a biological view, that this is our life support system. And my point has been for several years now, is that when I recast that religious divorcement and said, wait a minute, I am. And see, I would normally project outwards, we are. Screw the we. I am. I eat bananas. I eat apples. You know what that makes me at a genetic level? That food genetically becomes me. I am an apple. I am a banana. So why wouldn't I want to preserve the apple tree so that I could eat more apples? Preserve the banana tree so I could eat more bananas? I am nature. Nature is part of me. So it should be, and here we go again with Bin Laden, reciprocal. Well, defend nature. Otherwise, you're going to be extinct.
Well, you can realize you're a part of it. Yeah, that's the word creation, essentially. Defend creation. You're a part of it. This is, you know, it's interesting because that's what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to redefine the Bible. I'm trying to say, look, the church has taken these concepts of, for instance, the world and twisted it and said the world is nature and you shouldn't have a part of nature, when in fact the translations, the actual original words and intent of that is to say the world as a word actually was a Latin term that meant the artificial structures of man, the inventions of man, all the artificial things that man creates, that is the world. It wasn't God that created the world, it's the gods, the Elohim, the men, the magistrates who create these systems in order to exploit nature. And so, of course, they create these religions that, of course, purposely mistranslate, or hell, let's just read the Bible in a dead language, Latin, so that people don't understand anything, or we teach them English and they'll never get it. Right? So you have the church that's taking concepts like that and despoiling the Bible by preaching the absolute opposite, and the truth of the Bible, which anybody that does any kind of due diligence into the old languages and intent will find that the Bible is all about worshiping God as nature, nature as God, God as the word God is a generic term that means nothing until it's applied correctly, and of course it's mistranslated. It means kings, it means archons, it means magistrate, judges, all these things. And so the original terms, of course, you know, when you see that word Jehovah, no matter what your opinion of the word, when you go and you look at what that means in the Bible, that's all that matters. It's a verb. It means all that is, was, and shall be. It's nature itself. It is life. It is existence that is self-evident, right? That's what you're trying to say when you say, I am. That's what we should be worshiping. That's what we should be worshiping, not only as our source of life, our breath of life, but also as part of. We are not the creators. We are part of the creation. We're like any other animal out there. Because we have some fucked up notion that we're smarter than everybody else, we have the ability to create essentially weapons that make us the top of the species, the top, the apex predator, essentially. And with Ooh. That kind of power comes a massive kind of responsibility, which we call the moral law, the word of God, which just means simply the way nature already works, the way we are without all this artificial shit, which we call the world. And so my whole journey, my whole goal is to get people to the original, correct intention of the Bible, which is always 100% against what the church ever teaches, any church out there ever teaches. I want to make that, any corporate, you know, registered church of the state, which means it has no power against the state, and the whole purpose of religion, or being a religious man truly, is to be above the state, above the legal law, because it is the highest law. Well, no church that's registered under the legal system has any power over the legal system. That's why that's why America has no religion, because there's no law that is higher. We don't have any self-control. We don't have any self-law. I can't tell you how important that concept is to know that these words have been to think that the church, and especially that came from that concept of living this life for some afterlife, actually is a really new concept. It came from the Quakers, or whoever came over from Norway or Sweden, or, you know, basically the Jews, New Jerusalem, basically. The Dutch is who it was. And, you know, that came with them. That was the idea that we should live in this life, totally take a shit on everything in nature, because we're going to to go to heaven in the next life. Bible's not about any kind of afterlife. The word afterlife's not in the Bible. There is no shit like that in the Bible. But the church teaches that. The church wants you to follow the legal law. And so it teaches that you should live this life because the next life. No, 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 no. There is no next life. If there is a next life, we know nothing about it, what it is, whatever. That Bible is written as the law of nature in this existence and nothing else. If you are reading the Bible hoping to get some fucking key to some hotel room in heaven after you die, then you are a selfish son of a bitch that needs a slap in the face like what I'm trying to live. There's nothing in the Bible that has anything to do with what the church teaches. And that is what pisses me off the most about people who say, oh, Clint turned into a religious person. I'm like, no, I didn't turn into anything. I found a source of knowledge that is greater than anything I've ever fucking come across, and I'm trying to tell you about it, but because I'm using words that you don't like, that you've been trained to hate, even though you should love them, and the Bible, of course, talks about that, that we will hate what we should love. I mean, it's all right there. It's all right fucking there. And here I am, going in saying, oh, yeah, here's the mistranslation. Oh, I see, they're doing it on purpose. Oh, because of that, I'm a religious freak. You people are fucked up, fucked in the head to think that about me, the one person out here who's calling out every fucking religion as a fraud. And you're going to say I'm religious. Fuck you.
I forgot to give you your warning, Clint. It's 10:06 a.m. Central Time. And that's about the time that you start, like, soapboxing. So take your blood pressure medication.
Pass your piss off, huh?
Okay. So when I read things by Arthur Christian of Love for Life, he had one phrase in his material that said, you know, the Buddhist, which, by the way, Buddhism was around for, like, I can't remember numbers. Let's just say like 1,800 years before the Yahushua, the Jesus with a J that never existed. 1,800 years before Jesus was the Buddha. Then you got your Buddha, and you had your Mithras, and you had your, you know, all these religions, all the religions. It doesn't matter, Judaism, Islam. It doesn't matter what religion, because Islam is, like, I think, 700 A.D. It's really new. It's a fairly new religion on the market. And Arthur Christian said, they've had thousands of years to get it right, and nobody, he blamed everybody. He, you know, no respect of persons, nobody got it right. And I let that rattle around in my head for a long time, and then I decided, you know, I really don't like any religion. I think I'll invent my own. And so I did, and I created the Church of the Mechanic. And what I'd like to do, Clint, is give the canon, which is ecclesiastical law, of the Church of the Mechanic, and just see how it fits to what we're talking about. And then we might actually get to my points of the Electoral College, just to, like, you know, make some symmetry to this talk. The canon of the Church of the Mechanic goes like this. Things must work. To understand that, I'm a farm boy, and my God, if you got a tractor, powerful piece of machinery, tons of metal, complicated, you know, just gears and levers and knobs and things that go, you know, clunk. But if it doesn't work, it's just like thousands of pounds of fucking rust. If they don't work, you must fix them. So let's say you've got this wonderful machine, a tractor that can move the soil and grow food through hard labor, through thoughtful hard labor. If it doesn't work, then fix it. But you know what that requires? Out here on the farm, there's two kinds of farmers. Those that contract repairs, because a lot of times the machinery is too big and complicated for even them to understand. Or you can learn it yourself. And this, Clint, This is what distinguishes you and me from every other person out there. We did the due diligence. We did the hard work. We put in the sleepless hours and the tears and the sweat and the blood to get to where we're at. Learn how to fix what's broken.
Well, and you know, you said it first. You said there, you know, and I'll repeat it over and over. Someone asked me about abortion, you know, what I thought about abortion, you know, and the laws around abortion, and my response was a Patrick Jordan maxim. It was that you cannot fix a spiritual problem with political solutions. Simple as that. There is no fixing when the problem is a biological, natural problem. Well, then political, artificial, structured things are not going to fucking help. And that's basically, you know, become my entire philosophy on life. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that electing a fucking organized criminal casino owner who's been bankrupt 15 times over, you know, this psychopathic, you know, killer who probably has brain damage. You know, I don't think that is what's going to solve our problems, replacing the next criminal in the line and succession of criminals. No, that's a political solution to what is obviously, even according to Osama bin Laden, a fucking moral equation, a moral problem, a natural, a biological problem that's happening. So let's reel in a little bit here. Let's realize that democracy is basically the last step towards tyranny. And let's remember the design of what we're supposed to be, the design of what this country is supposed to be. All the warnings that all the judges and founding fathers and everybody else gave us was that if we lose our unwritten law, the written law will destroy us. It's that simple. If we lose our self-control, then those who seek to control us will conquer us. Conquer means purchase, and that's what's already happened. Obviously, money is not going to fix our problem, because money is what caused it in the first place. Money is what we pursue. We need to start pursuing, obviously, something else than that. There is no political solution. There is no governmental solution. There is no... Because remember, solution means end of contract. That's all it ever means. So that's the only solution. End of contract means stop participating in worldly things. All the legal shit. Go back to nature. Find the answers in what is self-evident, what is truth. That's what we're missing. And I gotta be honest with you, Patrick. I'm not saying that because I think it's gonna happen. I'm not saying that because I think that the general population, it can be quote unquote saved from the fucking bling culture that they've been put into. I'm saying that because there is a remnant, a remainder that aren't in the. There's people who are in the domain, and there's people who are in the remain. Main.
Ooh.
Main is a word that means principle, power, authority. You're there in the remainder of those who have claimed domain over that power, or you are under the domain, which is where we are. We need to become what the Bible calls the remainder. Remember, that just means those who are not of the world, not of worldly things that are creations of man, not the legal structures, not that thing. That's where your solution lies. That is the only solution, because solution means end of contract or end of contractual relationship. All contractual relationships are false. They're fake. They require persons and flattering titles and laws that are false doctrines. I don't know how else to say that. Laws that are not of nature, that are actually against nature and against our best interest. Again, there is no political solution to this shit except to end politics.
And see, this is perfect with the Church of the Mechanic canon number two. If they don't work, fix them. So what's your outlining, Clint, is this situation. Okay, I've got a tractor and it's broken. And maybe somebody else, other than you because you're too intelligent, somebody else comes by and they said, oh, what are you doing trying to fix my tractor? Oh, can I help? Well, yeah, hand me that inch and a quarter socket on a ratchet with a breaker bar. And they hand me a hammer. And that's what you're saying. You can't fix a spiritual problem with a political solution or political answer. And what you said also is, and what's the choice? One criminal for another. And that's like then me being stupid enough, once I've sorted out that I needed a proper socket and a breaker bar to get the part loose in order to replace it, then I take out a broken, rusty starter, and I get a spare of a broken, rusty starter, and I put it back into the same damn tractor. And I live your frustration, Clint, because it's like, how can you be so fucking stupid that for the past 200-plus years, they've been running the same goddamn football play, and nobody's been saying, hey, they're running the same goddamn football play and winning.
Well, yeah. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but in the language of the organized gangs and criminals, to put the fix on someone would be to kill them, right? So, I mean, if the fix is the death of all persons, which is a legal status, the death of all flattering titles, then we should be killing, fixing all these politicians, not destroying their lights, but killing their titles, killing their ability to claim authority over us. That is the fix. The fix should be in, but it's not. And when you think about it, Patrick, your second maxim there, player or canon, plays right into the word, you know, the concept of fix.
Right.
When we say fix, you know, think about something that's fixed, and you the only thing you can really come to is to say, well, it's no longer a temporary, it's stable, it's permanent, it's established, it's something that's not going to go away. And that's the difference between what is in nature, what is reality, and what is fiction, what is a creation or invention of man. All, and this is what the Bible says, nature is permanent. Okay, man is immortal not because he's going to live for 900 years because he's going to, be supernatural and surpass. No. It's because you're passing on the same blood to generation after generation. That's why it's so important to respect the blood, but not necessarily respect the fabled genealogy that they use to become king. All right, so that is immortality, the very life force that is man and other animals, that is the concept of immortality. Now, what happens when we're made into legal persons? Well, that's a fiction. So that is a temporary. We need to fix that. And what that means is to go back into what is the permanence of nature, the law, the source, the foundation of what it is that we are. So when we say the fix, when you want to fix something, well, I'm sorry to tell you this, folks, but again, you want to fix politics, there is no political fix. Politics is temporary. Politics, governments are temporary. They're always going to be temporary. So no matter what you do politically, you cannot solve this problem. This problem is a spiritual problem. You need a spiritual solution. Simple as that.
So let's find out what that solution might be. The third canon of the Church of the Mechanic is, if it can't be fixed, then recycle it. Now, see, I was on RBN from 2008 to 2011. And when I first started in that arena, I started to get excited about the Constitution and restore the Republic. And I did the unforgivable, Clint. I actually read the fucking Constitution. And within the day that I read it, I'm going like, my God, you got to be kidding me. This is total shit.
Right?
And the whole idea behind the premise of RBN was to restore the republic. Concurrently with reading the Constitution, I was getting into the Protocols of Zion, which say that they not only, they being the elders of Zion, they write the constitutions and they set up representative republics so they can put in their shills to run everything. And when you have those two concepts, that the Constitution, you know, and I understand when you say, well, Constitution is a very useful document for them. For us, it's a total piece of shit. So you couple the total piece of shit with the fact that the elders of Zion wrote it and created a representative republic for the express purpose of control, and I'm going, my God, I can't even stand to hear the words, restore the republic. That's like the most egregious thing on the planet. How fucking stupid can you be? Have you ever read these documents?
Well, and again, I always try to tell people, look, okay, whatever you think about that word republic, you really should look it up, right? But, you know, the concept of the republic is the concept of each state. Each state is a republic. The United States is not a quote-unquote republic unless you consider that all the 50 states are individually republics, and when Congress is assembled as the United States, then I guess you could call it a republic because that means 50 republics all in one. We're not part of that, you assholes. We're not of the territory, the land. We're of the nationality, the district, the corporation that has nothing to do with a fucking republic. Republic is for men, okay? The nation is for persons. The nation is for false identities. This is why you are a foreigner. United States is a foreign entity from all of the states, the republics, the peoples, the real people, the private people. You're not part of that. You don't restore the republic. The republics are doing just fine. They're full of a bunch of assholes that own the land that you tread on. It's like one big fucking monopoly board that you have a person, a little car or a little shoe that you go around and land on all these different people's land and pay them rent. Even your own supposed property, you're paying rent to these fucking people in the republics through their corporation called the United States. You can't be that stupid to think that the United States as a freaking municipal corporation is a republic.
And I'm laughing because, you know, at our level, Clint, you only have to hear the argument once and you go, oh my God, I get it. But there are people that can't hear it. I mean, literally, they go into this, like, hysterical blindness and deafness. They are not able to hear what we're elucidating, and I think extremely clearly. I mean, once you arrive at our level of cognition, And this is the quote that you like from The Matrix. You know, we have a rule. We don't extract people after a certain age because they can't handle it. And you can't put them back. Once you exit The Matrix, you can't go back. You can't go, oh, let's restore the Republic. You can't. And that the whole idea behind the recycling is this. What would it take to recycle a tractor? Well, it's a piece of shit with a bad starter and broken bolts, and it won't work. You can't make it work. There's nothing you can do to make it work. You can't fix it. So you take the tires and you shred them and you make a road out of it. You don't make another fucking new tractor. You melt the metal down and then you reforge it into something completely fucking different. Then, to end it all, the last canon of the Church of the Mechanic is, if it can't be recycled, destroy it utterly. And Clint, I mean, it just fits into everything that we've gone over so far. It's like you can't restore the Republic. If you can't recycle it, get rid of it. Don't even have it like a thought in your head. Oh, we were argued with by some idiot on RBN. Well, we need to go back to, like, the Articles of Confederation. And it's like, no, still fucking broke, you asshole.
I keep telling you, I was like, look, the Republic is right there. It's doing just fine. It's exacting and extorting everything it can from you. It's fine. There's nothing to restore. You want to restore something, restore yourself. Restore your self-respect. Restore the problem, not the... There's no problem going on except you. And the problem is that you have a religion. It's called patriotism. You see, it's the same problem that Christians have. So-called Christians who use a flattering title that means absolutely fucking nothing, especially in the eyes of God. And Christ must be pretty pissed about it, too. So, you got this religious belief in shit that has nothing to do with the actual facts. Nothing to do with the actual law, the actual written law. It can all be completely disproven. Skinner did a wonderful job in his Constitution of No Authority, right? I mean, there's so many outlets to go to, including the Constitution itself. To actually read it and see what it actually says is amazing, like you said. But people talk about it. They don't read it. If they do read it, they're not reading it to actually learn what it says. They're reading it like people read the Bible to confirm what the church told them. Oh, yeah, I'm going to take that literally. And so it's religion. This is why I'm against religion. I want you to get knowledge. Knowledge means looking at the Constitution, looking at the Republic, which is a fiction, as what it actually is. Not what you want it to be, not what you don't want it to be. Look at it for what it freaking is. Right?
So,
religion is killing us.
At this point, I have to emphasize something that I sent out to my email list that is best seen visually, you know, because you can see things in your mind's eye, but to actually see it, along with my explanation of it, is so helpful. And this is where people will fail. I'm saying that categorically. People will fail because they don't get our collective difference, me and you, and similarity. And this is it. There is a famous picture that if you look at it one way, it looks like a pretty woman with a bonnet. If you let your eyes drift, and some people can't, literally, they can either see one or the other. If you let your eyes drift, then you see an old hag with a big nose and a snaggle tooth and a wart. But in all actuality, the picture is just made up of a composition of light and dark and lines. And just like in The Matrix, there is no spoon. There is no beautiful woman. There is no ugly hag. There is only light and dark and lines, and your mind makes up what it sees. So when you read the Bible, you see it's what's called a positive and negative space in art. So like a cameo, a silhouette, the white would indicate, oh, that's a woman's bust, you know, the head and the shoulders. But the black would indicate what? The outline. But it is the black that contrasts the white and vice versa that gives you the overall picture, and your mind fills in the blank. So when I read the Bible, I see nothing but darkness and death. It doesn't mean that it is unipolar. They both exist at the same time, because what you are saying is it's just light and dark and lines. So get to learn what the light and the dark and the lines mean, and you can make of it either way.
Well, and to be even more clear, you must see it both. You must see both representations to get the full fathomable you know, conscious information out of that. You cannot just read it as good and say, oh, okay, you must also read it as evil. In other words, you must have the perspective of evil and the perspective of good both at the same time in order to actually get the neutral, which, you know, would be more like the path that Christ took, which is, hey, I'm not going to do either of these things. I'm going to stick to nature. Thank you very much. Right? I'm just going to see it as what it is, which is a bunch of freaking squiggly lines.
I'm going to look up the Deuteronomy quote because it's just it's bothering me. I've got to get it. Ooh, oops, wrong book. Okay, so let me read the stuff that I discovered on archives.gov, Federal Register, Electoral College Facts, Frequently Asked Questions. And we actually covered this on one of your RBN shows. I'm going to read this short paragraph. How did the, quote, elector and, quote, electoral college come into usage? This is the government. This is .gov. This is them telling you exactly the way it is. So I'm not making it up. You can go there. Email me. I'll send you the link. The term, quote, electoral college does not appear in the Constitution, period. Article 2 of the Constitution and the 12th Amendment refer to, quote, electors, but not to the Electoral College. In the Federalist Papers, here we go again, going back to the, you know, the copies with no originals, number 68, Alexander Hamilton refers to the process of selecting the executive and refers to, quote, the people of each state who shall choose a number of persons as electors.
Choose.
But he does not use the term electoral college.
No.
The founders appropriated the concept of electors, this is awesome, man, from the Holy Roman Empire, 962 to 1806 AD. An elector was one of the number of princes of the various German states within the Holy Roman Empire who had a right to participate in the election of the German king, who was generally crowned as emperor. The term, quote, college, from the Latin collegium, refers to a body of persons that act as a unit, as in the College of Cardinals who advise the Pope and vote in papal elections. Now, I want to remind people, this is archives.gov telling you the history and bringing you back all the way to the Holy Roman Empire and the fucking Pope. In the early 1800s, the term, quote, electoral college came into general usage as the unofficial designation for the group of citizens selected to cast votes for president and vice president. It was first written into federal law in 1845, and today the term appears in 3 U.S.C. Section 4, in the section heading and in the text as College of Electors. And dude, I've got to tell you, there is a difference, because you and I are wordsmiths. There's a difference between electoral college and College of Electors.
Yeah, it's true. It just means assembly. That's all college means. It's not like a freaking university or something, you know. It's just an assembly of men. What I find fascinating, Patrick, is, again, it's right there. We overlook words, you know. We don't think about words. But here's what the Constitution actually says. Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2. Each state, remember, a state is a people, each state shall appoint in such a manner a number of electors. Do you hear that? Each state shall appoint. Wait, what happened to vote?
Yeah.
Well, what happened to vote? What happened to elect? Wait.
Right.
Appoint? right? And then the Congress may determine the time of choosing the electors. So, in other words, what that actually means is that the representatives, the senators and representatives, actually, quote-unquote, choose. So what you do is you submit your name to the political party, and the political party actually chooses who the electors are, because that's what the senators and congressmen have done. That's how they've set up the system to create the quote-unquote college of electors. So the whole thing is a frickin', it's a rub, it's a scam. I'm amazed. I really am. Because the whole presidential election has about as much, the popular vote, in other words, has about as much relativity, as much legitimacy as the fucking Kardashian show. It's nonsense. I can't believe that people have been duped into participating, spending billions and billions of dollars in advertising, all that could be feeding people and solving all these problems, right? And it's spent on election, on the popular election. And the whole purpose of the popular election is to never reveal that the people don't elect. How fucked up is that?
I got a flash just now. It's like going, okay, we've got this broken tractor, you know, several tons of steel, just like putting like divots in the sod, going nowhere and doing nothing for anybody. And a bunch of fucking redheaded engineers are standing around, we'll design a better starter. And they like spend, the Holy Roman Empire, 892 A.D.? You got to be kidding me. You know, the Roman Reichs, which, you know, Arnie Schicklgruber often referred to, you know, the Third Reich, is the third reign of the Holy Roman Empire, gauged in thousand-year increments. So, you know, every thousand years, they're spending all this time and effort to redesign the starter without ever making one. We got these great plans, okay, you know, but the tractor is now like sunk into the ground and it's starting to rust and turn into soil itself. Where are your goddamn starters, man? So let me read to you. This highlights the thing that we're talking about with the Bible, because I use the Bible. I despise the book. You know, I'll just say that out there. And that's why I said, you know, you and I come at it from a different view, you know, pretty lady or ugly hag, but we both realize that it's just dark and light and lines. But when I read this, this informs me. This actually shapes my life and how I interact with the world. This is Deuteronomy 20, 10 through 15. When thou comest nigh unto a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it. And it shall be, if it make the answer of peace, and open unto thee, then it shall be that all of the people that is found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, and they shall serve thee. And if it will make no peace with thee, but will make war against thee, then thou shalt besiege it. And when the Lord, spelled in all caps, when the Lord thy God hath delivered it into thine hands, thou shalt smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword. But the women and the little ones, and the cattle, and all that is in the city, even all the spoil thereof, shalt thou take unto thyself, and thou shalt eat the spoil of thine enemies, which the Lord, in all caps, thy God, hath given thee. Thus shalt thou do to all the cities which are very far off from thee, which are not of the cities of these nations. So what that tells me, Quint, is that we are under planetary military occupation. And when they go shalom, that means I bid thee peace. That's actually a war challenge. It's not, oh, hello, you know, aloha, how you doing? You know, is the family doing well? It's a war challenge. I bid you peace. And if you bid peace, give them answer of peace, then you have just entered into a taxation, a tributary slave relationship with your conquerors. And you define what peace is. Peace is commerce.
It is a nonviolent war.
And isn't it just? You know, and not just in the term of justice. Isn't it exactly nonviolent war because they're waging it against us? Because nobody is, quote unquote, fighting back. They're going, yeah, they raised taxes this year. Yeah, I guess I'll just work harder. And stop paying those taxes. They'll take everything you got. Why? Because they declared war on you, man. And so when I say, you know, I read the Bible and I look for darkness, it's because that darkness is specific, and it spells it out. And by the way, thank you, Nisre, because that's the list member that had pointed this out to me, the tributary part, years ago. Years ago, I've been living with this Bible verse as an instruction. See, I don't reject the Bible as a piece of shit, even though I think it is. I don't reject it as a piece of shit if it serves me, and that verse has shaped my life.
What was the Deuteronomy what?
20, verses 10 through 15.
I always like to see what the word God, how the word God is.
Yeah. I was going to bring that up at some point in our discussion because Lord was capitalized in this version, and I jump between the Douay and the King James. Just sometimes I like the way that the Catholics have rendered things. It just seems like they're not hiding from people because. The Douay Rheims version was made for the clergy because, you know, when I was coming up, if you were a Catholic, you didn't read the Bible. That was left to the priests. And so I've always found the Douay Rheims to be have just a little subtle tweak that you go, oh my God, now I get it.
Yeah, and see, I've always been confused. I remember when I had Tammy Pepperman on the show, and she's, you know, basically really was who got me on this line of understanding that all these words are used, in, you know, purposefully and correctly. She said, and you know, her opinion was anytime you see the word Lord God, i.e., you know, you're mixing terms, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
That's always referring to the landlords, to the kings and the judges, and you know, you look it up. You have the word Jehovah, and then you have the word Elohim, the Lord thy God. Well, wait a minute. How can you have the one God and then a plural term meaning gods, which actually means rulers or judges, right? And so. That term, again, I always like to say, look, when you see anything other than Jehovah, it's talking about men.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you can't, and I keep trying to get this across to people. There's only one thing to blame, and that's you. You are the problem, nothing else. So never blame God, never blame the devil, never blame anything but you, and realize that... You know, whatever it is that you're looking for is there for you to find. Whether that's going back to nature or to God or that's going back to, you know, the fiction and personhood. So, again, you know, you look at that, the word Elohim is the plural of gods, and it comes from the word Eloah, which is God or false God, right? Deity, that kind of thing. So, See, the thing I've found is there's no way that you can actually mix the two. So because you're talking about something that is the source of all life when you're talking about God, it has no intention other than to exist, right? And that's the laws of nature. So when you're talking about the affairs of men and those types of writing, you cannot be talking about quote-unquote Jehovah. You can only be talking about the gods of the nations, which are all, you know, the Bible says is all idols. So I would only defend your position or offend your position by saying anytime you see men acting poorly against each other or quote-unquote God transcribed as having some plan against his own creation, i.e., then there's something wrong. It's a purposeful mistranslation, or it's a way of causing you to blame anyone but yourself as part of nature. It's a difficult concept, but man, once you get it, once you see it, then you can never ever mistake the notion that the word God is being mistranslated by the king, who, by the way, was God.
And by the way, Clint, there are within the alternative media patriot movement, there are quite a number of people that are very familiar with the all caps, the mixed capitals and lowercase, and then the lowercase designation of words. And they've turned that into like a feverish religious pitch,
yeah.
And they focus on it. But what they don't do, Clint, is what we do. We do the synthesis. We do the integration of these concepts. And when I read the King James, I am acutely aware of when Lord and or God are in all caps, because that renders it. And it's like the flags on the ship. They're flying the colors. This is King James with a shit-eating grin, a wink and a nod going, yeah, I all caps that, meaning it's a fiction, because that's what all caps means. It's a fictitious entity. And so if Lord and or God, Lord God, are in all caps, they're shining on, man, and they're telling you. But I know, like, university-trained preachers that have no clue what you and I are talking about. And it's like, wait, you know, you went to seminary, you studied the freaking Hebrew, and you still don't know what a farm boy and a fucking sound engineer, and I don't mean affectionately, fucking sound engineer, a fucking farm boy and a sound engineer have figured out on their own?
Let me give you an example of what is the difference, because you can find that the same phrase, O Lord God, in Deuteronomy 26.
Okay.
And you can see the difference, because in this case, where before it was Lord Jehovah and God Elohim, which is God, plural for gods or rulers, men, in other words, in this verse, it says, and I prayed, therefore, unto the Lord, which is Jehovah, and said, O Lord, which is Adonai, O Lord God. This time, Lord has a capital L and nothing else, but God is capitalized in all capital letters, and it means Jehovah. So that's the difference. Right? When we look at the word Adonai, Lord God, it's the way it's being said, it's merely speaking of the notion of Lord. It's a word meaning master, in other words. What is your God? What is your master? And I say again, Patrick, and the reason that I'm so adamant about this is because one of the things that really made me understand everything, how everything works, is that every creation has a God. Every creation has a creator. All right? Whether you're a patenter, whether you created government, whether you created the nations, whether you created a church, you are the God of that creation. So when you're reading these words, the only thing that matters is to know what God you're talking about. Are you talking about the God of fiction or the God of nature? You should not really take it any farther than that, because the God of nature, obviously, is not a physical entity, or it is all entity, all as one. There was a Chinese, I think, philosopher that said, when all things are God, there is no God. Okay, and if you think about that, that means nature. That if all of nature is God, then there is no God. That's what Jehovah means. It's a verb. It's the verb expressing all existence. So therefore, you have no, you know, image or form without substance to worship. You're worshiping nature itself, because there is no quote unquote God, because everything is God that is real. And that's the message. That's the point of the whole fucking point of Jesus. If I could sum up what Jesus was trying to tell us in his figurative character, it would simply be, hey, keep it real, man. That's it. Just stay in the real. Stay out of the matrix. Stay out of the world. That's it. And so these subtle differences that are so hard to just, you can't just read the Bible and not look up what these words mean. So here's a perfect example. You have Lord, the Lord thy God, which is not talking about Jehovah, but it's referencing Jehovah in giving the power to men to be Antichrist, or anti-God, or, which means replacement, by the way, or you have the notion of Lord God, which is specifically means Lord Jehovah. It doesn't say Jehovah and then something else. You see the difference?
Subtle. I think I get you. It would be better if you like wrote it out so we could see the actual case of the letters.
Yeah. Yeah. The point is that eventually you can, like you said, you're only seeing the dark, because that's all you're looking for, because that's what you've been trained to do. I see both, and therefore I can get the complete aspect of it, and I can always know when it's talking about the verb or the noun, the name, the empty name of God, or the actual substance that is all of creation, all of nature. Now, I'm not speaking these as religious terms. Again, these are law terms, mm-hmm. Right? The laws of nature, that it's not religion. So all the crap that is about men being gods, like the Pope and like the Queen and King, that is religion. That is the legal aspect of the church and the state. And you cannot, when you do your due diligence, like we talk about, you cannot possibly mistake one for the other in the Bible. It's obvious when the actions of men are involved against other men, that has nothing to do with nature, which is just sitting there waiting for us to freaking wise up to its laws. So, it's so hard. It's so hard to speak about this neutrally, you know? Because everybody wants to take sides.
They were trained to take sides because they were... This is the beauty of this system, Clint, is they were given a word like God, which in the Kabbalah, there's 72 names derived from the... And see, God is not a root. It's one of the 72. The G-O-D has 72 spinoffs, and it means different things within the Kabbalah. And what does it mean to the person that uses it? My God, sorry to say that. It can mean anything, because the user, the perceiver, can then apply whatever they want to it, and it's encouraged, because then it becomes stealth. Then it becomes mysterious. Then it becomes secret. And Kabbalah means from lips to ear, which was a secret oral tradition. So the secret mystery can be anything that the receiver wants it to be, and that's good, because those that hold the secret don't want you to fucking know, because that name, they were called the power words. If you have the names of God, you had control.
Yeah, yeah, that's my point, is that if you have, every time you see the word God in the Bible, if you go to the concordances and see what that word actually means, then you have the secret, you have the cipher, you have the code right in front of you, and almost every time you look, it ain't Jehovah, it ain't nature, the God of nature, it's the God of man, it's a man acting as God. That's why I say, I think you're looking at it the same kind of way, the many names of, or versions of God, but only one word was used in the King James translation, which is the word God. So you can't know the mystery unless you decipher the word God every time you see it. Now,
right.
That alone, it's kind of like reading the Constitution, right? You have to know what every word means. Why is this word capitalized and this word not capitalized? Because it's a cap and an M, and it changes the meaning. It changes the fucking meaning of the word. So look it up. Make sure you know the meaning of the word, why it's capitalized. When they capitalized something, they capitalized it to make a freaking business out of it.
And so here's the problem, Clint. Presumption within a legal framework is dangerous, because you are the one that defined, and you know, I didn't know it until you brought it out, the difference between reality and truth. Truth in the court is what is agreed upon by consensus, where everybody will say, even if it was a lie, as long as we agree that that lie is truth, that remains truth and can never again be rebutted within that case. So presumption that you even know what the word God means is smiled upon by the Kabbalists. They love it. Make your own religion. We don't care, because we know what it means and you don't.
And that goes back to, what's his name, Colonel, whatever his name was, who when he wrote his book on Masonry, the one point he was trying to make, the greatest secret of all that he was uncovering, is that the Masons have no secrets. There are no secrets. You see, that's the beauty of getting this spiritual sort of knowledge, the unwritten knowledge, is that there's no such thing as a secret. A secret can only exist as a creation of man. There's no secrets in nature. There's no secrets under God. And what is hidden from us, as far as, like, one of the maxims of law that I find so interesting, is that we can never know source. We can never know the source of life. We can never, no matter what scientists pretend they know, they can never know what created life. It's not going to happen. You're not supposed to know that. You don't call that a secret. You call that a law of nature. Now, the difference between a law of nature and a secret is that a secret is something that man creates to hide the law of nature. Right? So secrets don't actually exist. But secrets are the very foundation and structure of governments and churches, because you take knowledge, you twist it into a form that can't be understood or comprehended, and therefore you have a secret, because only you have the cipher, only you have the definition. There's no secret.
That's profound, man. Secrets are created to hide, not explain it.
Take your notes. Sonny.
I am.
We're at the end of the show, Patrick. Thank you for joining me again. Patrick, all your books can be found at vaccinefraud.com, along with lots of other stuff that you have provided and collected over the years. Look for Nota for President.
Try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list. That's retarded babble. Protesters make the hit list soon as they start to rabble. Don't fear nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary. Full
positive. I'm